rather than treat science as an abstraction, it's something real people are doing because they care about the world.
The COVID-19 pandemic illustrated very clearly that faith leaders were science communicators and science policymakers.
Hello and welcome to Faith at the Frontiers, a podcast that confronts challenges to the Christian faith with hope. This is the second episode in our ECLAS, Equipping Christian Leadership in an Age of Science series. I interview Katie Hinman and Lucas Mix, who run a pioneering new program called Science for Seminaries. What? Science? In seminaries? Why? What good would that do? Well, if those are your questions, and they certainly were mine, then stay tuned. You'll find out the potential impact this kind of project could make, both to faith communities and to the scientific community as well. I hope you enjoy listening. Well, it's a very great pleasure to have Lucas Mix and Katie Hinman on this podcast episode, the second in our series with ECLAS on science and religion. And to begin with, I'd just like to hear a little bit about who you are and what you do for ECLAS. So how about Katie? Do you want to start us off?
Certainly. Well, full disclosure, I am just a consultant with ECLAS. I am from the American Association for the Advancement of Science in our dialogue on science, ethics, and religion. My background is I have a PhD in ecology and evolution, and I am an ordained United Methodist pastor. I've served in church pulpits for about 9 years before coming to Dozer, as we affectionately call the Dialogue on Science, Ethics, and Religion.
And Dozer, I've not heard that acronym before. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I've been here since 2019 and been the director since 2022.
Amazing. Well, it's wonderful to have you here. Lucas, tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, my name is Lucas Mix. I am the project manager for ECLAS, or Equipping Christian Leadership in an Age of Science. Like Katie, I started off in science, did my PhD in evolutionary theory, and I became ordained in the Episcopal Church in the United States. I have served as a college chaplain and as a facilitator for communication between disciplines, and I have been working with ECLAS, particularly on science for seminaries, for the last 3 years.
That's fantastic. So both of you have been spending most of your careers involved with both sort of science and the church, so you'll have a lot of experience and a lot of perspective on how science relates to issues arising from the church. So what we're here to talk about has to do with the role of seminaries in ensuring that the church is engaged with science. So do you want to tell us what kind of work you do in that area to start off with?
If it's okay, I'll jump in, since the Dozer project was the kind of genesis, if you'll forgive the pun, of this project. Back in 2014, Dozer began a program called Science for Seminaries, giving grants to seminaries to incorporate forefront science into the core curriculum of the training of faith leaders in training. And the idea behind the project was Dozer had spent some time prior to that really exploring and planning how to better equip future faith leaders to lead their congregations when confronted with areas around science and society. A lot of times, people will go to their faith leader when they have questions about science issues, even though that may not be something that is generally thought of. So issues around health.
It's a trusted voice, isn't it? It's somebody who
exactly.
You trust to have a wise and insightful opinion.
Right. And we think especially about issues around health, medical issues, and things like that, but also things about how we're interpreting and using technology in our lives, how we are understanding different challenges like climate change, AI, all of these places where science and society meet. People will talk to their faith leader about it. And science is generally not part of the theological curriculum. And so this project was started in order to give seminarians an introduction to some scientific topic in their core curriculum, but also hopefully to introduce them to how science interacts with their ministry and to help them feel more comfortable engaging with these topics and even just knowing where to go for good scientific information. So that program was started in 2014 and just ended in 2022. We gave grants to a total of 54 seminaries here in the US through that.
Wow, that's incredible. So if I think about that in terms of the problem that this grant was setting out to solve, it was that there would be all of these ordained ministers who were being approached with genuine questions about science, but who were not necessarily equipped or trained to answer those questions with any level of insight or knowledge. And so the Science for Seminaries is an attempt to try and equip these ordained ministers so that they can actually address these issues in an intellectually robust and rigorous way. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. And the idea was not that they're going to get the full scientific training, but just that they would have enough background to feel more comfortable addressing these issues, know where to go for good information about them, and understand how issues of science and society interact with the faith life of their congregation.
Yeah. Lots of different ways that they interact, I guess. It's all the places where the results of science have an impact on the way society works. That's where people sort of start to get interested in what science has to offer. Lucas, what's been your involvement with Science for Seminaries?
Well, you use this word equip, which of course is key to the way we look at things at E-Class. About 13 years ago, we really looked at the science religion realm and said, why is there so much tension here, and how can we equip people to better negotiate these areas where we need to solve problems that really require both religious expertise and scientific expertise? And truthfully, we started by trying to put together like resources so that seminaries could have special classes on science and religion in case people were interested. And we discovered that seminarians didn't have time for that. The seminary schedule is so packed that people don't have time for those extra courses. And we started looking at some of this wonderful work done by Dozer and said, this is a great way to go about it. Let's talk about putting science into the core curriculum. Let's talk about how science is impacting the way we do things like doctrine or liturgy or preaching, so that not only is this something that ministers are comfortable with, but they're comfortable connecting with the practice of ministry. And so we started this 3 years ago in the UK. We've done 12 grants in the UK, and we're starting to explore how we might promote Science for Seminaries programs in other countries around the world.
That's fantastic. So could you give me a couple of complicated examples of where sort of the grants and the scholarships offered by Science for Seminaries has actually trained ministers in a particular area of contemporary concern?
Well, I think one of the issues that comes up a lot in both of our programs is, how do we think about climate? It's this big word that sort of refers to everything around us. And therefore, it really impacts both on our scientific view of like our physical surroundings, but also our theological view of our spiritual surroundings. And so how do we talk about climate and climate change in a way that both informs Christians, but also empowers them to do the work that we think we're called to do in response to all of these things that are happening?
Yeah, climate change is a really big one, isn't it? And it's a source of quite a bit of tension, sort of political tension, especially in the US.
We've also found that the schools that we work with, one of the approaches that I think makes Science for Seminaries somewhat unique is that we don't dictate what science or what courses the schools are engaging. So they come to us and say, we would like to engage this kind of science in this core course, which means that you have a variety of approaches, and that schools can contextualize for their own students. So, for instance, Howard School of Divinity incorporated paleoclimatology into their Old Testament courses. And then we've also had like pastoral theology courses that are incorporating evolutionary principles about disease and neurological understanding of how the brain works in pastoral care. And so all of these different ways that schools choose to incorporate different areas of science into their curriculum. So they're not kind of pigeonholed into the sorts of topics that I think kind of generally leap to mind when people think about science and religion, which are generally evolution and human origins. Some of the schools do look at those issues, but many of them look at cosmology or biodiversity when they're looking at Old Testament texts from Genesis to Job and exploring biodiversity and how that's being impacted by human activity.
I've heard it said that sometimes a bit too much attention is given to the very sort of conflicted areas of science and religion, whereas it's actually a much broader and richer discussion. And one of the examples that you just gave is a helpful one. Like if we're thinking about pastoral counseling and care, then that touches very obviously on psychology and psychiatry, which itself touches on questions of neuroscience. So you can see science sitting in the background to all of these different kinds of questions. Yeah.
I've been very excited by a couple projects that have approached neurodiversity and learning difficulties and how different people are processing information differently, and the ways that we can think about that when we're preaching, both preachers who might be not neurotypical and for congregations that might not be neurotypical.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, actually. It sort of impacts very pastorally on the way that we deal with people in our congregation who don't necessarily process information the same way as most people do. Any other examples of sort of projects by Science for Seminaries that have been successful or completed?
One of the ones that I particularly like was done by Ripon College, Cuddeston in Oxford. They had a Befriend a Scientist program where they paired seminarians up with practicing scientists, and they would just get together and have one-on-one discussions. I think both of our programs have really emphasized this idea of how do we make personal connections between people who are doing science and people of faith? And sometimes those are the same people and sometimes they're different. But rather than treat science as an abstraction, it's something real people are doing because they care about the world and how we can build these bridges between people who are really emotionally and practically connected to day-to-day problems and have found that it's a wonderful way of sharing faith as well as sharing science.
That's really helpful. And it's one of the themes that we've already seen in this podcast series, is that we need to think of scientists as just people like us, and they're not so different. They're not in this different category. And so if we get to know them, we start to see that the work they do is just human work, just like anything else. And it sort of demystifies it and makes it less of this rather strange abstract notion that gives us ideas, but rather it's just part of what everybody else is doing, which is seeking understanding and knowledge and learning about the world that we live in. So I guess if I think about this from a slightly more abstract angle, one of the criticisms that you could have of such a project is just to say, well, why do we need science to be involved in seminaries? Surely we have enough people doing cutting edge research on science and religion. And if they just publish that research and disseminate their ideas about how science and religion connect, that's all we need, right? So why do we need work in seminaries on science-engaged theology?
I would say the first thing for me is we would never ask why Spanish people would want a Spanish preacher. We know that people learn about the gospel from people who are like them. And so building these personal bridges, neither Christianity nor science is something that is done by experts and then just exported to the general public. It's all about making those personal connections.
And to be fair to the wonderful researchers who are doing excellent work in this area and publishing papers and books, those generally are consumed by people who already have an interest in these issues. As much as we'd like to believe that somebody's just going to be walking by and pick up a book about science and religion in general, it's a smaller audience, perhaps. But these issues are affecting everyone. I mean, the COVID-19 pandemic illustrated very clearly that faith leaders were science communicators and science policymakers deciding how their congregations were going to meet and respond to the pandemic. Were they going to continue to meet in person? Were they going to require vaccination? Were they going to require masks? Faith leaders had to make those decisions, and people were coming to their faith leaders for information on that. They were influencing whether people were choosing to get vaccinated. And so this is where people are encountering these issues, is in their day-to-day life, not just in a book that's exploring the theoretical foundations of how science and religion might go together. They are experiencing science and religion going together in their day-to-day lives, whether or not they might articulate it that way, whether they might kind of identify that's what's going on. And so equipping these congregational leaders to at least have some understanding of how science works, where it might be intersecting their lives, better prepares them for those times when they smack right up against it and need to know where to look for guidance and information.
And if we do our jobs, then the people who go through science for seminaries will feel comfortable picking up these books in a way that they might not have before the program.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is it sort of addresses one of the big problems that exists in the academic world, which is how to get those results of academic research out there and well known to the popular people. And as we know, academics, when they've spent, 10 years or 20 years researching just one particular area of history or physics or geography or something, they're often not the best equipped or not the best person to explain that to the ordinary person who's spent zero time studying it. So there's this constant sort of gap between the academy and the rest of the world, and academics constantly fret about how do we bridge that gap? How do we find this sort of middle person to disseminate those ideas, to understand the ideas in their, all their complexity, but also to disseminate them in simple ways that everybody can understand? What I'm hearing you say is, for the church, there's already that middle person sitting there, right? It's the average minister, preacher, pastor, priest. They're already there. They're just waiting to be given the tools to bridge that gap. And so churches are in some ways in quite a unique position there, wouldn't you say?
Exactly. These are the areas where people are kind of going specifically to think about how we live our lives and how we make decisions about what we're going to do. And when you can resource the leaders of those congregations with information and tools to engage those questions more deeply and more accurately, then you are resourcing the entire congregation at the same time.
Yeah, so it has a very quick, wide-reaching impact, the kind of work that you guys are doing. Have you had any sort of pushback or any resistance from any seminary or any congregation to the kind of work that you were doing?
We do occasionally get some pushback, but I would say, again, part of the unique way we've structured the Science for Seminaries program to not dictate the ways that schools are incorporating science and things like that has actually made it very accessible to denominations and schools across the theological spectrum. Because we aren't saying, even though Dozer is part of a scientific society, we are not taking a theological stand on any of this. We are trying to make sure people have access to good science and ways of interpreting it and incorporating it into what they're doing. But we don't require that in order to receive this money, you must subscribe to all of these scientific principles that we are laying out. We say, whatever science you do needs to be good science, and we will help you find the tools to connect with people who are doing, you know, good peer-reviewed forefront science. But it can be what areas you're interested in, your students are interested in. So we have very conservative seminaries that most people would say, I would not think of that as a place where people are talking about science and religion, because they're able to look at the areas that are of interest to their students and to their communities, and to really bring that information in without being told that in order to do so, they have to also accept all these other theological or scientific principles to be able to access.
Yeah, okay, so it's very generous, sort of empowering, not sort of dictating a particular agenda on how science and religion relate, but just giving people the tools to figure that out for themselves.
And a lot of the time we're making introductions. So we find out who they want to talk to and what they want to talk about, and we help those conversations occur. I think it's very easy to think of this as what's been called sage on a stage, where you have an expert come in and just sort of hold forth. But that turns out to be bad science communication, I think, as well as probably not the best form of evangelism. How do you set up people to know each other better? And so even though E-Class has a slightly different ethos, we do our own theology research, we're very clear with the diverse seminaries that we work with that we are all about constructing spaces for people to do this work, and they're the ones who are driving. And I think that makes it possible to tackle some of the more difficult topics in new ways.
Yeah, very cool. Very interesting. So you're saying you introduce the seminarians to scientists as real people, and that means it's not just scientists who happen to have faith, but it's scientists who are opposed to religion as well.
Our rubric is find the best scientist for the topic.
That's very interesting. Do you ever find that some of the seminarians feel a little bit threatened by being introduced to a scientist who's somewhat hostile to religion?
Well, I mean, we do avoid scientists who are going to be hostile in conversation, but
have to be at least like reasonable.
Yeah. I have found very, very few scientists who were not interested in sharing what they studied, why they care about it, and why they think that it's true. And, you know, you tackle those questions that are of interest to everyone who's there. And I think once you view things that way, it becomes a lot easier. So how do you think about people that are just engaged in solving problems?
It's very interesting, this model, because it seems to acknowledge that on the ground, on the practical reality of the lives of the ordinary Christian, they do actually place a great deal of trust in their local pastor or priest or minister to give them answers, without necessarily saying whether or not that's something they should do. Do you think that ideally the average congregation member would be going directly to the scientists and trusting what the scientists are saying? Or do you actually see a legitimate role of the minister in sort of mediating the results of science from a theological perspective?
I am enough of a Protestant that this word mediating rubs me a little bit the wrong way. Is to mediate, but I do think that the pastor is frequently a guide in unfamiliar territory.
Could you use the word translate instead? Would that be better?
Translate is good. I like guide because you're not doing anything for them, but you're doing something next to them in a way that they have the option of repeating.
Yeah, you're leading them into new territory without necessarily determining or having an agenda on how they understand that new territory, I suppose.
And there are all of these angles. I have found many scientists get nervous talking about the ethics of their science because they don't consider themselves experts in ethics. And so a pastor, I think, well, I will say, needs to start with this frame of humility that they're not going to be the expert, but they are going to be someone who can help people wade into the territory and connect with the experts and come to their own conclusions about what is right and good and useful.
Yeah, so it seems your approach is generally very open-handed. It's not about proposing particular answers to how science and religion relate, but just trying to get the conversation going in a friendly and useful way. Is that right?
The title of our whole program is The Dialogue on Science, Ethics, and Religion. And so our principle definitely is bringing people into conversation, opening spaces where these conversations can happen and where these issues can be discussed. And that is a very important principle for us. And I think the other side of this that Lucas has kind of touched on a bit is that particularly for AAAS and for our program as a whole, this is not a one-way street. It's not just about getting good scientific information out to people. That's certainly a goal of a lot of what we do. But the other side is that the scientific community needs to hear from faith communities. They need to hear from people who are thinking about the ethics of how we do science, how we apply science and technology in our lives. We need to hear that as members of the scientific community and be open to those conversations, because it can be easy to kind of be in a little science bubble and not kind of understand how scientific discoveries and research are affecting people's day-to-day lives. And so the flip side of this is not just that people in the pews are hopefully going to hear a little bit more about science and understand it a little bit more, but also that they will be voices for the scientific community to understand how the work that they're doing is impacting people, how people are using it in their day-to-day lives, what the challenges are, what the ethical issues are that you may not be thinking about when you're doing the research in the lab.
That's actually a very helpful addition to what we've been talking about so far, because up until now, it sounded like it was very much a one-way street, just getting the scientists with their information out there amongst the communities. But now you're saying that actually the scientists themselves have something to learn as well about the impact of their research and about the way that science is commonly viewed by the ordinary person, which they may not be aware of. There does seem to be more of a feeling among sort of the ordinary person on the street that there is something of a conflict between science and religion. Like my own experience, I remember just getting a taxi once. I don't remember where it was to, and getting into a big argument with the taxi driver because the taxi driver told me with great confidence that science had disproved religion. And I was like, I didn't know anybody still thought that, but apparently he wasn't just like an oddball. He was a relatively ordinary person, and he was expressing a view that was actually much more common than I realized.
It's very popular, and interestingly, it's not terribly accurate historically that science and religion have been in conflict. And as you said, there's many people working at the intersection. I think for me, a lot of it comes down to why we think the things that we think. And it can be threatening when other people think something different. So how do we have real conversations about those things? And the issues like, you know, ethics, like, you know, how do I make choices? Those are questions that science, sort of in a strict sense, has difficulty tackling. And we found, I think, both of our programs, not in science for seminaries, but have parallel things that help scientists sort of encounter religion as well, have found that scientists can feel daunted. And so how we get past this conflict of authorities view into one that really, really talks, I think, as I'm sure I've said before, how do we solve problems as individuals and communities in ways that take advantage of all this cool stuff that we know from our various backgrounds?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I mean, I guess part of what this dialogue shows is not just some of the great results that science has to offer and the ways that it impacts our society, but it also raises awareness of the limitations of science as well, what science can't actually offer answers to, and where science must must end and other things must begin, whether you call it morality or religion or philosophy or whatever. And that's just as important a message to get out there to the ordinary person on the street.
And to scientists, because science done well is science done carefully. So let's talk about what it means to do science carefully.
And I think, you know, part of the kind of conflict idea or kind of impression comes from these places that are really, for most people, much more theoretical, much more kind of esoteric than understanding how this is impacting them on a day-to-day basis. When I make decisions about my health, I'm going to take into account what my doctor tells me about the science and everything like that. But I'm also going to talk to my faith leader about, you know, how I'm feeling and what different treatment options are available. How do I make a decision? You know, those sorts of things people are grappling with every single day. That's science and religion right there. And yeah. Most people don't think of that when they're thinking of science and religion writ large.
No, that's right. People tend to think of it as this sort of fundamental questions about what you believe about ultimate reality, whereas it can come down to just your daily choices, whether I go and get the COVID vaccine or not, that kind of thing.
Another thing people don't think about is the way that technology mediates the way we think about things. So, but how do people encounter the Bible? Are they encountering it as a book? Are they encountering it, you know, as an audio tape? Are they encountering it on their cell phone? There's all of these ways that our science and our technology and our faith all get wrapped together in the way we do our daily lives. And it changes the way we think about things when we even interact with scripture through different means.
So where do you see the future of science engaged theology in seminaries? What do you see needs to happen next? Where does this need to go?
Well, I would love for this to become just a regular part of all seminaries' core curriculum. You know, we are working on ways to take the lessons learned from science for seminaries and generate resources for schools that aren't able to get a specific grant to work on this, but how to incorporate this into their curriculum, how to connect with scientists in their area, what sorts of topics they may be interested in looking at. We have a number of film resources that we have generated that are great kind of discussion starters on some of these questions. But I think, you know, again, helping people to see that science as it relates to their faith is not a question of just theory, but that there are these real daily examples that are in their lives and understanding how they can more actively participate in these conversations about how science works, how we're using it, and see how it relates to how they're living their lives as people of faith in the world.
That's very cool. So what you want to see is science engaged theology in seminaries not just being something very particular, one interesting project that happens in a handful of seminaries, but just go mainstream, be something normal that people don't think about as unusual anymore. Yeah.
We hope that we're starting something that others will carry forward in their local context. And part of that that's really important, I think, for both of our projects has been decolonizing the curriculum. There's all of these very, for want of a better word, Western ideas about how we talk about science and what constitutes religion that we found really are just not part of the way other communities around the world talk about these issues. So how do we talk about agriculture and technology and medicine and health that may not go by the label of science? So as facilitators, we want to help move into those territories where it's been harder in the past with the labels of science and religion. And really, once again, just get people talking.
That's a very interesting point. I mean, it was a point that came up in our first series on science and religion, that the whole debate between science and religion has been framed in sort of quite a white Western way, perhaps even an English-speaking culture way. And if we broaden out our lens and look at the way science and religion are interacting in other places around the world and in other cultures and other races, then we see it looking very, very different. And those conversations need to be brought in to enrich the whole discussion.
I think that gets into the issues around trust in and trusted messengers and things like that. And also, when we think about some of these questions about conflict between science and religion in a very concrete way, when you think about things like vaccine hesitancy and things like that, a lot of times within the scientific community, there had been a kind of view that, like, oh, people just don't understand the science, and that's why they're hesitant about vaccines, or it's just a political issue, and kind of ignoring the fact that for many communities, especially in the US, I can't speak to the UK, but I imagine that there is some of this history as well. For many marginalized communities in the US, there is very real and justified suspicion of medical research and medical treatments. When you look at the history of how the US has treated Black patients in medicine, that's a very justified suspicion of medical science, that having more dialogue between communities, between scientific communities, religious communities, can help understand the issues at the root of a lot of these conflicts and hopefully begin to build trust and to also provide some guidance for scientists and researchers.
Yeah, that's a very interesting angle, that actually sometimes bad things have been done in the name of science to affect other particular ethnic cultures and populations. And there's a sort of understandable fear and suspicion of science there, which only dialogue can start to build those bridges and erode that suspicion and bring about a sort of genuine change in understanding. Anything else you guys would like to conclude with?
It's a lot of fun. The open-ended approach really means that everyone's coming at you with a new and concrete and interesting take on the question of how science and faith fit together. And so every project is something new and something that is of concrete importance to someone living their life. And it's been an honor and a real joy just working with people and seeing all of this happen.
Well, that's well worth saying, actually, just to point out, this whole dialogue between science and religion is not sort of a duty, something you ought to be involved with so that you don't have a whole load of misconceptions or misunderstandings, but it's actually just great fun. You learn a lot, you meet interesting people. Why not just dive in?
Yeah, the creativity shown in these projects and the different ways that people engage these, the different types of activities they do, is just amazing. And of course, coming from a scientific society, seeing people get interested and excited about science in any way is always, you know, such a pleasure. And even more so, I think, when it's in a somewhat unexpected venue. When you see people getting excited about science in seminary, that's an extra treat.
Absolutely. I mean, there's few things more enjoyable than watching somebody get really excited about some new idea or something that they're learning. It's a wonderful pleasure and a joy. Well, Katie and Lucas, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing these insights and for the wonderful conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for listening to Faith at the Frontiers, a podcast produced in collaboration with The Tablet. If you liked this episode, then do subscribe to hear more like it in the future. For now, goodbye.